Nancy Wang is our guest this week on Off the Record. She's from Voters Not Politicians. She's trying to reform state government. Lots of luck. Now, let's talk about the governor and restrictions being lifted, maybe. On the OTR panel, we have Kyle Malin, Rick Albin, and Lauren Gibbons. Sit in with us as we get the inside out. Off the Record.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by the following. Business Leaders for Michigan has a strategic plan to make Michigan a top 10 state in the nation for jobs, personal income, and a healthy economy. Learn more at michigansroadtotop10.com. And now, this edition of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.
Thank you very much, and welcome back to Off the Record. We appreciate you taking time out of your weekend schedule to sit in to find out what's going on in Lansing, and you're going to meet three people who know everything that's going on in Lansing, and they are magically appearing right now. Rick Albin, Kyle Malin, and Lauren Gibbons. You guys are smiling. You don't know everything? what kind of journalists are you? Eh? Lauren, let's kick it off by talking about the governor who she sort of bellied up to the bar this week on lifting restrictions, but she didn't order anything.
Yes, it looks like the trends are positive in Michigan, or at least more positive than they have been. Vaccination rates are going up, and the case numbers are looking better. And while there have not been restrictions lifted, as you said, in the last week, it did sound as though the governor was headed in that direction. She was talking about her interest in getting kids back to in-person learning sooner rather than later. We're starting to, see a little bit. I think that it would be fair to say that it's likely that more restrictions will be lifted soon.
Kyle, when you read the tea leaves, what do you see?
Well, I see a few things that are probably going to be the next up. First being nursing home visitations. There's a real problem in nursing homes right now where older folks have not been able to see loved ones for months and months and months, and they're getting depressed, they're losing hope. And I see the governor doing some easing up on those as long as the people involved have gotten vaccinated. I think that's coming very soon. I think we're going to see more on restaurant capacities. At some point, we're going to get to 50% capacity. Maybe that's as part of the nursing home visitations, but maybe that's later. Also, I think that at some point, the governor is going to, and not the governor, but the Department of Health and Human Services Director, Elizabeth Rutel, who actually signs off on these orders and technically makes the final say, I think we're going to do something about capacity and gatherings and how many people you can have in a particular space. You know, the thing about this pandemic and in the public health orders is that folks have got kind of that next level of things that you can open up. There's still several restrictions out there. And, once things start rolling in a certain direction, in this case, they're rolling downhill, the numbers are looking positive, there's always going to be something else that can be pointed to as saying, hey, we can do this now. We can do gyms at, 50% now. So I think we're going to start seeing a gradual rollback here in the coming weeks as these numbers keep going down.
Rick, it's a little dangerous, is it not, for her to go there, because lurking in the background is the variant of the virus, and wouldn't it be something if she did these rollbacks and then had to put them back on because of the virus? This is a roll of the dice, isn't it?
Well, it certainly looks as if it is, because we don't know about the variant. The problem is that we finally learned something about this pandemic. We learned about COVID-19 and some of the ways that we could combat it. And we've been doing that now for the better part of a year. But remember, early on, we didn't really know what we were doing, and we shut a lot of things down. Maybe some of those didn't have to be, but it was out of an abundance of caution. So now you've got a circumstance where the numbers, as the other panelists point out, are much better than they were, particularly if you go back to the fall. But we've got these variant strains, and if they are more contagious, what does that mean? What do we need to be doing? Do we need to be double masking? And are there other things that we don't know that could be a real problem if you do start opening things up more broadly? The other question is, if I'm a restaurant owner and you say I can go to 50%, well, am I just losing less money? I'm still making money at 50%. So I'm not sure that going to 50% is going to be I mean, it's better than 25% for restaurants, obviously, but for some restaurants, that's not going to be enough either. And you talk about some of these other places that still want to open up, and you're right. If some of the restrictions are rolled back, other places are going to say, well, what about us? And then if you say, okay, then you can have larger gathering, more people, and the variant strains start to spread. You're right, Tim. You might be in that situation where you have to close it down again. But what's the alternative? Just keep it closed down out of the unknown, or try to open up as much as you can, because the economy of the state has taken a big hit, and the state of Michigan's economy is going to take a big hit when they start looking at budget numbers a year from now.
Yeah, Dr. Khaldun was quite clear that the national modeling, as they say, is by the end of March, the dominant theme vis-a-vis the COVID will this B117 from Britain. That will be the one dominating. And Kyle, the governor's also got a little problem still with that COVID aid money. Is any progress being made there?
Yeah, probably not the kind of progress that she was hoping for. But yes, the Senate did move $2 billion in COVID money on Thursday, which means more money for vaccinations, more money for testing. There's more money for K through 12 schools, a $450 per student boost to all school districts in the state. But it's not everything that she wanted. It's still $4 billion more or less than what she wanted. But the Republicans are claiming they're being good stewards of the taxpayer money. They want to make sure that everything that is being spent is being spent appropriately. And once they sign the check and give everything over to the administration, they lose control over it. And that's why they're holding back. They're saying everything that that they're giving, that they're signing off to the administration, is what we need at the time. And if they got to do another bill in a month, they'll do another bill in the month. So they don't see this as a big deal, but the House and the Senate aren't on the same page. They still haven't talked to the budget director as of earlier this week. And so there's still a lot of work to be done, but it's a very slow crawl, Tim.
Lauren, let's assume, and I think this is not a safe assumption, but let's assume that the House and Senate actually get together and send her something. Does the governor veto a package of $2 billion when she wanted $5.6 billion? Or does she hold her nose and put pen to paper and say, all right, I'll take this and we'll work on it later? What's the move?
I think it remains to be seen what the actual package is, because as Kyle mentioned, the House and Senate packages were pretty different. But I think it would be hard to, veto outright money to go towards some of these initiatives, especially things like vaccine distribution and some of the other things that are included are rental assistance, food assistance. So even if it's not the full amount of federal funding available, I think it would be pretty hard to veto it if it's not the perfect package. That said, there's a lot of concerns that House and Senate Democrats have had with what legislators are tying to this money, with the way that the vaccines would be distributed, and also potentially in the House, you saw an effort to tie it to policy initiatives that would give local health departments more control over what reopens. So I think there's a lot that still needs to be worked out here before it even gets to the governor.
Rick, the really sticky wicket in that legislation from the Senate was the removal of race as a factor in determining who gets the vaccines. That is a lightning rod issue for this governor, is it not?
Yeah, it is. And if that remains in there, I think that gives her a motivation beyond the dollars and cents to veto this package if it comes to her. Now, as Lauren said, we don't know what it's going to look like by the time it gets there, by the time the House and Senate hammer something out. But the other problem is, they'd like to get some of this money out there sooner rather than later. So while it is happening, it's not happening very quickly, certainly not the amount of money. And the governor would be under limitations depending on which version of this goes through. So I guess I am not as certain that she signs it, because if it gets to her with some of the things that have been attached to it, or at least some of the things that the Republican leadership would like to attach to it, and if it comes to her in a form that is $4 billion short, she may well be able to find a way to justify a veto, and the state of the legislature come up with something that'll work, but do it quickly because we need this money and we need it now.
Yep, there's a lot of moving parts here. The good news is the state budget director, Mr. Masseron, has not had a negotiation session yet with the two chairs of the respective House and Senate appropriations committees. But it looks like, as we record here on Friday morning, that those talks might happen this afternoon. And if that does happen, at least they have the three key players in the room who need to work all of this language out. Quickly, Kyle, the Michigan House passed a change in the lame duck legislation, and eyes are glazing over right now all over in TV land. But what happened in the House?
So the House approved a constitutional amendment that's now going to go to the Senate. They're going to have to approve it, too, in order for it to go on the ballot. And what it would be is that any bill that is passed during the lame duck session, which is the 6 or 7 weeks after an election, there would have to be two-thirds support from both chambers for a bill to get sent to the governor for signature. This is designed to prevent bills that are of a direct partisan nature or not well thought out from getting to the governor and get signed into law. In the last few sessions, at least 40% of the bills that became public act were passed in the lame duck session. And I think Speaker Jason Wentworth wants to prevent that from happening in the future. So it got sent to the Senate, and it's up to them to decide if they want to put it in front of the voters for approval.
The soundings that we're picking up initially out of the Senate is not everybody's going to go, hey, this is a great idea, starting with the Senate Majority Leader, who privately, I am told, has said, we're not so sure. Lauren, what's your read?
Yeah, I think it'll be a tough sell in the Senate. It's the first step for the House Speaker's initiative to bring more transparency bills to the fore. It's not the first time the House has tried to initiate transparency issues. We saw bills opening up the legislature and the governor to some form of public records disclosure go through the House last session. It did not make it through the Senate. So that it remains to be seen whether or not the Senate Republicans can be convinced on this matter. Although the Speaker has said that he plans to make this a top priority and use the full weight of his office to try and get these bills through. So perhaps there's more of a push this time to maybe convince the Senate leadership that this is a priority. But I think there's still a lot of moving parts that need to be addressed.
Let's not lose sight of the fact that the Speaker's weight of importance carries zero impact to the Michigan Senate, in case you don't know. Rick, is this thing DOA in the Senate? Let me just point out one other thing. I had somebody whisper in my ear, the reason this is not such a great idea, at a time that the Michigan Republican legislature is trying to wrestle more power away from the governor, here's a proposal that actually takes power away from the legislature to do what it wants to do at a politically opportune time. Rick?
Well, first of all, I think that any of us who have been in the chamber at 4 o'clock in the morning can come up with at least some justification for doing away with lame duck as we have known it in the past. But the idea is that if you look back in that last year of the Snyder administration, that lame duck session and all of the money that went out and in the early morning hours, all of the spending, all of the different things were put through. I mean, we're in a different situation as we come to next year, when you would have another potential for a lame duck because you have a Republican-controlled legislature, Democratic governor. So even if they pass a bunch of stuff, it's not likely to get signed. But in the overall, not just looking at today, what it means overall, the question is, do you want to bridle the legislature after they have stood, in some cases, for their final election from passing a bunch of bills that previously hadn't been considered, perhaps because they weren't expedient from a political standpoint? And if you do want that to happen, do you want to make it more difficult for those bills to get passed? And I hope it would be a question of procedure and the proper way to look at governance more than it would be a matter of wresting power away from the legislature. I mean, unless you have a governor who's going to go along with you, you don't have that power anyway, right?
All right. On this point, and that's a good segue into our guest now. Let's introduce Nancy Wang, who is with us. Nancy, this is not DOA in the Senate, but some people would argue it's on life support. Would you agree with that analysis?
Well, you said when you first started talking about this, that this is when people's eyes glaze over, but this is really when my ears perk up. You know, I think from a voter perspective, the time is now. I'm hoping that the Senate Majority Leader, you know, after talking with his constituents and his colleagues, you know, that there will also be broad bipartisan support for passing this resolution in the Senate and putting the issue to the voters. You know, I think that's important to acknowledge here, that the issue is not before the Senate to pass into law, but rather that their vote is needed to present this issue to the voters. And I think we will find that the voters overwhelmingly will support this measure, because lame duck, all it does is it gives lawmakers who either have been termed out or was, you know, were just voted out free rein to use the political system to cram through bills that benefit themselves and their special interests.
Would you concede that it is in trouble in the state Senate vis-a-vis Mr. Shirky?
Well, you know, I think at this point, given the broad, you know, almost unanimous support we saw in the House, and I think, you know, it, given the political landscape right now, you know, public trust in our institutions, in our Senate, in our House, you know, public trust in our politicians to get things done that actually benefit us, we're at an all-time low. And so I think the House really acknowledges that. And, you know, when it passes, when it kind of introduces and passes these kinds of resolutions, and I would hope that the Senate, you know, I mean, they are aware of the political realities as well. And so we really fully expect that this measure will pass and be presented to the voters.
Lauren.
Yeah, to kind of piggyback off of that, what in your mind has changed from last session? We still have the same leadership in the Senate, and he has historically been a little hesitant to take up some of these measures. And it's not just him. Past Senate leaders have also been concerned about this. The House has always been, in the last decade or so, a little bit more likely to support these measures. So what's changed in your mind?
Well, I think what's changed in my mind is the fact that, you know, groups like Voters Not Politicians exists. And I think that, you know, we are gaining more and more power each day. And that really, again, just is emblematic of the kind of public, you know, demand for these kinds of measures. I think, you know, it's really top of mind for people. And this kind of, you know, underscores our commitment to other ethics and transparency reforms that I'm hoping we can talk about today. You know, but ethics and transparency and accountability, those are really voting, you know, issues for the voters, you know, perhaps at a time, at a level that they have never been before. And I think our politicians are realizing that, you know, these issues are more and more being discussed in the media, like we do here and, you know, in the news. And I'm hoping that, you know, politicians really can see the writing on the wall and see that, you know, voters are demanding this, and we're going to hold accountable those legislators that kind of stand in the way. And we're going to be looking for reasons where why they, you know, are not looking into the voters' best interest in voting on these bills.
Kyle.
Nancy, what are your members telling you specifically that they want to see in terms of reforms?
Right. So we, you know, we are voter driven. We have thousands of volunteers, and we survey them, you know, periodically, and time and time again over the last few years since 2018, you know, at the top of the list is ethics and transparency and accountability reform. So things like getting, you know, reforming lame ducks so we don't see an incident like 2018, when 340 bills were crammed through and made into law during lame duck. We want to see, you know, a closing of the revolving door, right? Where, you know, it's like these examples come up time and time again, where you have a lawmaker directly go from being in office, you know, across the street to the lobbying firm. And that just, you know, it just kind of reinforces this idea that voters have that, you know, lobbyists or lawmakers are really working for lobbyists as opposed to the voters. You know, we want to see an end to kind of a veil that kind of, you know, shrouds all of the activity that's happening in our legislature. We want to see open records. We want to see financial, you know, personal financial disclosures, so we can see, like, you know, what is really driving lawmakers? Are they voting on bills to put cash directly in their own pockets, even though it hurts their constituents? And again, we have examples where that actually has happened. And then we want real conflicts of interest laws, not this kind of guidance that, you know, lawmakers are kind of, you know, encouraged not to vote on things where, again, that they have a personal financial interest. We want laws that actually prohibit them from doing that and actually, you know, putting voters' interest, you know, top of mind for them instead of their own. And we need an independent ethics body to actually enforce those laws, because even if you have, you know, robust laws, there's always going to be those lawmakers that can't resist the temptation and break those. So those are the kinds of things that we want to see. And we think they're necessary, given the fact that Michigan really is an outlier these days. You know, some of these, like personal financial disclosure, 48 out of 50 states already have them, because they are so basic to, you know, curbing or preventing corruption and self-dealing. And, you know, in time and time again, in some of these national surveys, Michigan ranks 50 out of 50th in terms of, you know, ethics and state government. And so, you know, it's high time for us to kind of reform it. And again, you know, rebuild the public trust in our government, in our institutions and our lawmakers.
Rick, jump in.
I appreciate your passion, and I'm certain that the people that are part of your group are very well aware of some of these things you're talking about. But the public as a whole, I'm going to suggest that if I went down my street and asked each of my neighbors what lame duck was and how it worked, I'm not sure that they would have a real good working knowledge of that, not because they're uneducated, but because they have their own lives and they don't watch the legislature as closely as we do. How do you convince those folks who don't feel it's a problem because they're not aware of it, that this would be something that would be important if it gets on the ballot?
Right. So you know, Voters Not Politicians, we formed in 2016 to end partisan gerrymandering. And of course, you know, we won that campaign and put a constitutional amendment in place to put citizens in charge of redistricting. So at the time when we took up this cause, everyone was saying, well, who cares about gerrymandering? Who even knows what that is? And what we did was we just kind of, you know, we did face-to-face, well, now it's going to be Zoom-to-Zoom conversations. We held town halls, and you give, you know, our one of our models was you give us 10 seconds and, you know, we'll convince you. And I think, you know, the same thing holds for lame duck. You can break it down in terms of accountability. Do you want politicians who just got voted out or just were termed out, who are not accountable to any voters whatsoever, to be able to have the power to push through laws that just benefit themselves and to manipulate the political process to serve their donors and special interests? Or do you want, during that lame duck session, you know, for these lawmakers only to be able to pass laws that benefit all voters and that are not controversial and enjoy the, you know, the support of a majority of the legislature and, you know, both parties? And I would think that, you know, in 10 seconds, people would understand what this is about. It's about lawmakers being held accountable to the voters. And I think just like gerrymandering, you know, voters understand that this is a problem and would fully vote to support it if it were on the ballot.
Nancy, given the delay in the census data coming in, will Michigan not have new voting district lines in time for 2022, or are you going to get that done?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the fact of the matter is that 90% of the redistricting process is really kind of, especially during under our constitutional amendment now, where it's a citizens commission, 90% of their job really is to go around the state. And they're starting to do that now, to take input from communities, to understand where the communities are, because they need to draw maps that keep our communities intact. And so they're holding public hearings, they're taking that input right now. And then there's going to be a part, you know, of course, where you do the best you can with, you know, data that you have, including census data that's available for 2010, but then also official data that's available for 2018 and 2019. And then you can put the maps together in this way that's sort of like, I describe it as if you had poor eyesight, you know, you're looking at this map and it's fuzzy around the edges, but you can still get the gist of where the lines will be. And then comes September 30th, which is when, you know, the Census Bureau says it will be the last date, you know, by which we could possibly get the census data. Then it's a matter of, you know, the public having been primed for these conversations and, you know, refining those lines around the edges, which of course matter, but it doesn't take as long. And so what we're hoping is, you know, it's going to have to be a court that kind of shifts the deadlines, but I think it just needs to do so in a modest way in order for us to abide by the constitutional deadlines, which currently there is a, you know, there's a small conflict there. But again, I think a modest extension of time is all that is needed. And absolutely, we fully expect that there's going to be maps in time, in place, to be used for the first time in the August 2022 primary.
So let me be clear here. You're going to go to the courts and ask for an extension on the deadline to accommodate the late arrival to the census data. Is that a fair statement?
Well, you know, I don't think it wouldn't be voters, not politicians. It's in the constitutional amendment. And so I think it will have to be a matter for the court to resolve only to the extent of moving the deadline slightly, not with respect to anything at all. So our constitutional amendment makes it very, very clear that all of the business of redistricting must be done by this independent citizens commission. And the court's role would be to extend the deadline again, slightly so that all the other, you know, constitutional amendment deadlines can be met.
Are the courts ordered to do that or can they do it if they want?
Well, you know, I think this is just a matter procedure, I would say. You know, when you have a conflict like this, you know, we really do need some judicial action in order to relieve the fact that there is going to be a conflict between the census data and the current, you know, constitutional deadline. So, for example, to be specific, you know, the Constitution says that the commission has to release sort of a final set of maps that it's going to vote on by September 17th. And of course, it won't be able to have those final maps without the census data. So it's really just a matter of weeks, you know, perhaps a few months that the commission
will jump in and answer. All right, we're unfortunately out of town. We'll see how this story unfolds.
I can talk about this forever, obviously.
That's all right. It's great to see you again. Also, our thanks to Kyle and Lauren and Rick. See you right here next week on the next edition of Off the Record.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by the following. Business Leaders for Michigan has a strategic plan to make Michigan a top 10 state in the nation for jobs, personal income, and a healthy economy. Learn more at michigansroadtotop10.com. For more Off the Record, visit WKAR.org. Michigan Public Television stations have contributed to the production costs of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.